We're all concerned about air pollution. The technical term is ambient air pollution. We suspect that it causes a lot of problems, and there is some evidence to back that up. The Lancet has published a study of 25-year trends of the global burden of disease attributable to ambient air pollution. And one of the lead authors is Michael Brewer of the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, School of Population and Public Health there. Welcome to the Health Report.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So just define what we're talking about here with air pollution in this study.
Right. So we're focusing on two different types of air pollution here. One are the very, very small particles, what we call fine particulate air pollution. These are particles that are invisible to the human eye. They're 2.5 micrometers in diameter or smaller. And to put that in perspective, the diameter of a human hair is about 100 micrometers in diameter. So there's millions of these particles in the air. And then the other type of pollution is ozone, which is a very reactive gas that's produced in the atmosphere.
And what sort of diseases do we know are associated, before we get to the data, with these two kinds of air pollution that you're defining there?
So in this study, we're focusing on five different diseases that are the ones where we really have the strongest evidence base for them being affected by air pollution. And that's ischemic heart disease, so primarily heart attacks, stroke, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which is bronchitis and emphysema, lung cancer, and acute respiratory infections. And again, primarily that's pneumonia. We do know that air pollution likely affects many other diseases, so things like diabetes, asthma, preterm birth, low birth weight, and even studies coming out now looking at dementia and mental health impacts. But these five diseases that we focus on are the ones that really have the strongest evidence base.
Now, you can imagine chronic obstructive lung disease, lung cancer, asthma even. You can understand the mechanism there because you're breathing them in. What's the mechanism for a heart attack or a stroke?
What happens, especially with these very small particles, is we breathe them into our lungs and they seem to cause local inflammation. So our body's trying to fight these particles as though they were a bacteria or some kind of an infection. But because these are not living organisms, our body's defense mechanism can't kill these particles. So that inflammatory reaction just keeps on going. It starts out in the lungs, and it turns out that it basically spills over into the general circulation. So what happens is you essentially activated your body's defense mechanisms, and you have lots of these circulating inflammatory cells in your bloodstream, and they turn out to affect your heart and other organ systems. So that's how something that actually starts in the lungs can affect the rest of the body as well.
Now, we should just explain something about the Global Burden of Disease study, because you use a metric called the DALY, the Disability Adjusted Life Year, which was co-developed by a New Zealander called Chris Murray and an Australian called Alan Lopez many years ago. And it's a combination of dying prematurely and years lived with disability as a result of the diseases you're, in this case, you're particularly talking about. So you're not talking about loss of DALYs, you know, loss of years of life to disability and mortality. What did you find when you actually did the global research on this?
So this work is done in the context of this very large project called the Global Burden of Disease, which is essentially a massive accounting project where we're trying to look at the causes of death all around the world, separated by country, by age, by sex, and then also looking at risk factors for all of those deaths and incidents of diseases around the world. So with air pollution, we found that it was the number 5 leading risk factor for death around the world out of about 80 different risk factors.
That's huge.
That were looked at, and responsible for about 4.2 million deaths in the year 2015, which is around 8% of the global total of deaths. Now, why is air pollution so important? It's not as though air pollution itself is one of the more hazardous things that people will face, but it affects everyone. So we found that about 90% of the global population lives in places that exceed the World Health Organization guidelines for air quality. And actually, as we continue to do our research, we're finding that we can demonstrate impacts on health even below that World Health Organization guideline. So in aggregate, it becomes a huge problem just because so many people are exposed to levels of air pollution.
So it's not as bad as cigarette smoking, but because so many people are involved, the mass, it's got a huge population effect.
Yeah, exactly. So for the individual, it's not as bad as cigarette smoking, but fortunately, not the whole population smokes. But unfortunately, in the context of air pollution, almost the entire world's population is exposed to levels that we think are linked to some level of impairment.
And This is a low to middle income problem, or also in developed countries like Canada and Australia?
So certainly the problem is most acute in rapidly developing low and middle income countries. So in fact, the lowest income countries of the world generally don't have severe levels of this outdoor air pollution. They may be affected by another form of pollution, which is also quantified in the global burden of disease. That's called household air pollution, and that's
indoor cooking
over open fires. Yep. In countries like Canada and Australia, this is not as important as it is in, for example, places like China and India. We tend to see a fairly constant sort of pattern in that as countries develop, air quality gets worse, and you can imagine higher levels of economic activity, people driving vehicles, industrial productivity, use of electricity. And then at some point, air quality seems to get taken seriously enough, and we put in place sort of the standard air quality management programs that we have had in effect in North America, Western Europe, and Australia, New Zealand as well, and air quality then sort of tends to improve. For example, in Australia, it's the 15th leading risk factor out of those 80 that were evaluated in terms of deaths and responsible for around 3,000 deaths in 2015. That's about 2% of the total. So not nearly...
Still not nothing.
Not nothing. And same sort of levels in Canada. I think Canada's sort of the 12th leading risk factor. And again, it's that issue that we do have some levels of air pollution, even in highly developed countries like Canada and Australia. And again, everybody is exposed.
So the solutions are further economic development and regulation.
Yeah, we really know how to solve this problem. So I often say this isn't like finding a cure for cancer. We know what the solutions are. In fact, we've implemented those solutions throughout much of the high-income countries of the world. So it's regulation and enforcement, and especially sort of technology forcing regulations that allow you to generate that electricity, to move your population around in ways that aren't so highly polluting. And contrary to popular belief, there's really no association between increased regulation of air pollution and economic activity in the sense that this affects the economic development. So California is the best example, some of the tightest air quality regulations historically around the world, and their economy's grown, for example, much faster than the U.S. national average. So it's not a yes-no, you have, you know, good air quality or economic activity.
Michael, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Professor Michael Brower is in the School of Population and Public Health at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver.